This is The Process on SiriusXM Business Radio, offering guidance and insight into the college admissions process. Now, here are your hosts, Eric J. Furta and Eileen Cunningham-Fikens.
Welcome to The Process on Business Radio, SiriusXM, Channel 132. I'm Eric Furta, the Senior Associate Director of College Counseling at the William Penn Charter School in the city of Philadelphia, home of the NFL champs in that glow. I'm going to say it throughout the show, wherever I can. Was on Broad Street, was in New Orleans visiting our friend Sean Abbott at Tulane.
Yay,
was down
Sean.
There 2 weekends in a row, actually, because I had to fly in the next time. But I digress. This is The Process on SiriusXM Radio. Eric Furta with my partner in The Process.
Hi, everyone. It's Eileen Cunningham-Fikens, Dean of College Counseling at the Dwight Englewood School in Englewood, New Jersey.
What is the show, The Process, anyway, Eileen? Can you explain to people after 92 shows what we are?
I am happy to. We just have a blast talking about all things college admissions, Eric and I, and The Process allows us the opportunity to do so and share whatever insights we are able to with you, our listeners. So The Process dives into the journey of college admissions, and we explore the inside of the search process to help families, students, colleagues, counselors, regardless of where they are in the college application timeline. And we're doing this to provide useful and actionable information. We recognize how many myths and misconceptions exist in surrounding the college application process. So this is our mission, to demystify and knock out those myths and just give you the great facts that we are able to share. And I'm really stoked about our guest who will be joining us probably in a little bit, Mr. Adam Ingersoll, who is one of the founders and principals of Compass Education Group. And stay tuned, because we're going to be talking about the new ACT, the changes that are unveiling as we speak about the standardized test.
People just pulled over the side of the road on their morning commute on that one. They're like, honey,
ACT.
We're talking about the ACT. Turn on the radio.
If you've got a junior in high school, if you've got a sophomore in high school, even if you have a freshman in high school, you need to listen to what is happening with standardized testing. And so here we are, The Process, SiriusXM Channel 132 Business Radio.
So we're doing all of this, and all we're asking is that you give us a call at 866-993-8267, 866-993-8267. And you could ask some questions along the way.
Or shoot us an email, right? You can shoot us an email at theprocess@siriusxm.com. Like, cool. We'll look at those emails. I love those emails. It's your questions that will direct our conversation every episode. We also include in every episode, or many episodes, a college spotlight.
We dive deep into different
colleges and have their deans or directors of admission give us inside information about what makes their school unique. And it highlights for us the vast array of options that are available to students exploring college.
That's what we are. Rolling through the month of March. So, Eileen, in your day job at the Dwight Englewood School and my day job at William Penn Charter School.
Yeah.
Still have seniors that are rocking and rolling through the month of March, you know, really excited for those decisions that are going to come out. Excited may not be the word.
Looking forward to them.
But confidence. I mean, we had a plan all the way through.
Yep.
We have our juniors. We're full in with them in our junior seminar, our college counseling junior seminar. You're probably rocking with your college knowledge and family meetings.
All our juniors and their families are coming in. Yep.
8 of them this week.
Wow.
So, you know, wherever you are, and for those families that are listening, it's like, gee, Mike, I don't have a seminar like that. I didn't know I was going to have a family meeting or should have a family meeting. You know, try to be proactive. We understand that some of these ratios are 200-1 and worse, while also there's a lot of free resources for you out there. I mean, certainly our radio show, but when you think about some of the resources that are out there, even by, we're talking about testing today, the College Board, right? If you took the PSAT, you have Big Future, then that app and platform that you could do some searching on colleges, put in your criteria, all for free, put in information for scholarships, leverage those free resources. We're talking about testing today, Khan Academy for the College Board SAT, a free resource, which is really rich. I mean, for the families listening, mainly what you need to do, though, is make sure that you have enough discipline, or your child, or you're giving them enough discipline to kind of help them with the timeline. So just plenty of resources out there that are free, while also we're here to answer your questions. So please utilize us.
And absolutely. And here's something that I don't know if a lot of families do this, because they might feel that they're not permitted to, or how do they get started? If you're interested in a particular school, go to their website, Google it. Every college or university's website is going to end in the domain edu, right? So go check out some schools. Since COVID, colleges have really done a fantastic job of broadening and deepening their virtual resources to help students get a better understanding of what makes their school different or unique. So whether it's what their admissions policies are, whether it's their curricular
around
model,
testing, as we're
right, or testing.
Today.
And again, as long as you have Wi-Fi, you can hop on and do a lot of college research. So we're not saying you have to go travel to these colleges, although that's fun too. We love it.
Absolutely.
But there are great resources, and tap your guidance counselor or college counselor, because they will often have a lot of resources in their offices, and they wish more students would take advantage of it.
That's right. That's right. And so we are in testing season in many ways. You know, spring of one's junior year could roll into the summer and then even into the fall. Mm-hmm. And so for that class of 2026, those students graduating from the class of 2026, you're in this right now. And that's why we're going to have Adam on the show today.
Absolutely. And looking forward to it. Anything else happening in your office right now?
You know, what we really appreciated was we had our case studies program. I think you had yours recently, too.
Yes, we did.
And a real shout out to the admissions folks who came out of their busy day jobs again to, you know, go through four, you know, fictional applicants to East Falls University, because Penn Charter's in East Falls, part of the city of Philadelphia. And our families really appreciated that, having that opportunity for the case studies. And here was the takeaway from the case studies. If you've never gone through this, kind of a breakout, admission committees, read four applications they could admit to, waitlist one, deny one. And across eight different committees, there were different decisions. Obviously, there was some overlap. So for the families listening to us right now, that there is a level of subjectivity in this. It is still a human process, even with AI, which we're going to have on another show, I'm sure. So, you know, buckle up for Adam Ingersoll on The Process, Sirius XM Radio, Channel 132. What do you say, Eileen?
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Just a small town girl. Living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere.
Listening to The Process on Sirius XM Business Radio, offering guidance and insight into the college admissions process. Here again are your hosts, Eric J. Furta and Eileen Cunningham Fikens.
Welcome back. This is The Process on Sirius XM Business Radio, Channel 132. Eric Furta from the William Penn Charter School in the city of EAGLES, Eagles. Not as loud as I was a few weeks ago or a month ago or whenever it was. As always, with my partner in the process who lives near the team that traded Saquon Barkley to us.
Hi, this is Eileen Cunningham Fikens, Dean of College Counseling at the Dwight Englewood School. Also an Eagles fan by default.
By default.
Our son lives in Philly. Was a Lions fan until they blew it.
Yeah, thanks for letting us have home field advantage. But we have other things to talk about here on The Process, helping families about standardized testing. And for, I think, the fourth time on our show, we have Adam Ingersoll. So, Adam, welcome back to the show.
It is great to be here with you yet again.
Well, we're excited. And for our listeners out there, I'm going to do a brief intro. Adam Ingersoll is the co-founder of Compass Education Group, a leading national provider of test prep, for SAT, ACT, AP, and academic tutoring for students, testing-related programming and services for schools and resources, and professional development opportunities for college counselors. Adam has worked in this field for 3 decades. It's hard to believe it's been that long. And he is a frequent speaker at schools and conferences. I know we love it when he comes to talk with our families at the Dwight Engwood School. And he also presents on standardized testing policy and practice for different admissions teams and faculty at universities such as Caltech, URochester, TCU, and USC. When he's not on the road for speaking engagements, which is quite often, he's at home in Madison, Wisconsin, with his spouse and their 4 teenagers who are each at various stages of the college process. Wow. Adam, congratulations for being at that point in parenthood, and we're behind you, buddy. You'll get through it. And thanks again for coming back and being a guest on the process.
It's my pleasure. 4th time's the charm, hopefully.
Every time is a charm for you.
On the bio that I'd like to highlight, I don't think I've really picked up on this before. For those of you listening here on SiriusXM Business Radio, educators, individuals who are obviously invested in education in the higher education sector, I'd love that you work with admissions teams and faculty at various universities to really help them understand what the purpose of the tests are, how to use them responsibly, whether they need to or not. So I'd like to highlight that on the show. That's a great opportunity, Adam.
I'm glad to hear that, Eric. I think when we've done it, it's always been received very positively, and I think it's been very useful to them. And I will say, I always come away from those presentations of 2 minds. One is I'm heartened to be reminded of the really good humans who work on that side of the desk who are doing their very best. But I also am often a bit sobered by the wildly disparate opinions they often have about standardized testing and the lack of consensus uniformity in how they handle the tests. So I think that's a little window into the fact that so much of this college process is inherently a bit random. Luck of the draw, do you get a reader who, you know, low-key just really likes the tests or who is even excessively skeptical of them? You don't know. So that's been my consistent experience.
You know, Adam, so often when Eric and I are fielding questions from our parents or families or students, one of our first responses will be, it depends. And yeah, that insight is in keeping with pretty much everything when we talk about how to research colleges and what makes them tick and how they live their mission through their policies and through their admission standards, et cetera, and practices. And that's just another example. You know, it's so funny because I have so many questions, but one of the questions that has been percolating a lot in our office at Dwight Englewood, we have a number of 10th graders who, I don't know why they're doing this, but they are taking, well, to a certain extent, I know. Some of them are very, very strong in math, and so they're capitalizing on this point in 10th grade to sit for standardized tests because they know their math is going to be moving in a much more complex direction as they go through the rest of their career here at Dwight Englewood. And the math that they're being tested on standardized tests, like they've already taken that math, right? So they're keeping in mind that pacing. But there's also this feeling that they want to be done with the test. So they're taking the test sophomore year. And because you've been presenting at a lot of colleges, I'm curious if you know what colleges think of accepting a standardized test from a child's 10th grade year. Mm-hmm. And are they doing so willingly without any more subsequent testing? Or is the preference to have testing that is more recent to when the child will be applying to school?
I think most of readers would be oblivious to the date a particular score was earned and wouldn't care otherwise. But to your earlier point, there are always exceptions to any supposed rule. Carnegie Mellon a few years ago took a very strident position on this and said they would not accept testing prior to 11th grade. I think they got a bit of pushback because there are scenarios where a student taking it in 10th grade is not doing anything, you know, particularly wrong or ill-advised, but they still strongly discourage it. So there is a bit of thought that's gone into that by some schools, but I think the majority is, okay, hey, a kid took it in 10th grade and we're not going to, you know, to worry about that either way. To your first point, this idea that because you are advanced in math, that makes you a good candidate to test particularly early because the math will fade, is usually a bit overstated. Students overthinking it. One, okay, the data show that most students need the development on the verbal side to happen more organically throughout, you know, school before they can hit a peak score on the verbal. So this is often a student who might bank that peak math score early on, but then still has to stick with testing through their peak verbal score. And then think about how this plays out. That kid who has to continue taking the test a year later for the purposes of getting their best verbal, they're not going to feel comfortable letting their math totally wither. So they're going to have to do some ongoing just brush up review. And the other thing I would say is for your strong math students, that's who we're talking about here, they tend to learn math cumulatively. You can't forget everything, you know, from one year to the next and still continue to do well. So for that profile of student, the review they'd have to do to refresh the earlier math is usually very, very trivial. So in general, I discourage early 10th grade testing for that reason. It's a good idea, but there's dimensions of it they're not thinking about.
Yeah,
that's really helpful. And then you see students just keep taking the test to try to get that, as you said, peak verbal score.
I always say, Eric, that the thing that the test prep industry knows about you if you start really early is you're almost certainly likely to prepare and take the test for longer.
Yeah.
You know, so one question I always have, Eileen, is like, has a test prep person been in their ear pushing that advice? And if so, that person should know better.
And whether it's a test prep person or perhaps an outside counselor that doesn't know our curriculum as well, perhaps very well-intentioned to kind of get that off their desk, so to speak, so that the student can focus on other things.
Make a broader point, it's one of the things that you're revealing here is this world of testing inspires so much effort around, let me find a clever twist or an angle to play to get an advantage. I was thinking about this. The fact that you've had me on your show now four times is in some ways a sorry statement about the world, because as you know, you said,
we just like you, man.
Well, thank you. I like you too. The college process is inherently nebulous and complicated and dynamic and so on. But theoretically, the standardized testing piece should not be. It shouldn't be where there's the most chaos and uncertainty and just rapid change, you know, but here we are. I have more to talk about this time than probably any of the other three previous times.
Ooh, how intriguing. Well, and that's one of the reasons.
Before we tacked over to the ACT and all the changes with the question that you asked Eileen, Adam, and I'm not sure what you do at the Dwight Englewood School, Eileen, at William Penn Charter School, and I'm sure other places, we don't administer the PSAT in the 10th grade to our 10th graders. And we know 11th grade is when it means something for national merit. Kind of in the same bucket there, Adam, about sophomores taking some type of PSAT, or just what are your thoughts on that?
I think a best practice for schools and for individual families, if the school doesn't provide it, is to make sure that by fall of 11th grade year, the student has had good quality diagnostic test experiences for both the SAT and the ACT. Great. Quality means good quality tests, real tests or good facsimiles that produce comparable scores, and then detailed reporting. Ideally, that should happen for students who want to get a jump on things. I'm totally fine with diagnostic testing and the planning process happening in 10th grade. For many families, that's totally appropriate. And then I think on the tail end, if you let the diagnostic testing assessment piece go beyond fall of 11th grade, you may find yourself behind. So that is a core best practice for your entire audience that I think is really important.
Great. Yeah. Perfect window.
One of the reasons that's so important, Eric, is we have never had a situation where the two tests available to students, SAT and ACT, have been more different. So there's more value than ever before in getting the experience. It's entirely your choice. Colleges, not one of them, cares which one you take. So it's an opportunity to do a little bit of homework up front to see which path will serve your interests best. And you definitely want to make sure you realize that before you go 6 months down the path of the wrong test for you.
That's right.
Sure.
That's great advice.
Absolutely. And, you know, here we are. Is this show 92, Eric?
think it is.
Right?
Something
show
like
92?
That.
Okay. So,
Katie, thumbs up on that, right?
So,
Katie Cassiano.
Adam, if it's four times in 92, right? And we just got a message. Katie said, yep. So, what really prompted our, not only because we like to hang in with you, all right? So, that's the first thing. But what really prompted our invitation is this new ACT and the policies that are coming out about the ACT. And we want to make sure that we have a good understanding of what's going on. I know I attended one of the counselor webinars that you hosted, but that prompted even more questions. And our families, I don't think, well, our families don't know as much as I do, certainly, but we're starting to introduce this information, but there's a lot of misinformation that's circling out there. And so if we can dispel some of those myths, we figured you're the guy, right?
I would love to tell your audience about the new ACT, because it is fascinating to me in the following respect. I have been presenting, as have my colleagues, to about 250 school audiences this school year so far. And they are almost always, these are sophisticated audiences, you know, savvy parents. And in general, they are in a state of disbelief that what we're sharing about the ACT is accurate, because it doesn't seem very logical. It seems very ill-conceived. And most people, whatever feelings they may have about the College Board and ACT, a lot of parents think of them as these like stodgy, sensible nonprofits, especially ACT. And that's just not what typifies their behavior at the moment. To understand what ACT is doing, I think it's helpful to think of the frame here. It's interesting to me that we're recording here on February 27th, 2025. What was happening exactly 5 years ago to the day? All of our lives are about to get turned upside down. This global pandemic bearing down on us. New York, you're already there, you know, right? And the sea change that precipitated in admissions and testing specifically, they were still experiencing the ripple effects. And what I mean by that is both testing agencies took a body blow, a near fatal blow from the effects of the pandemic, with schools being closed and kids couldn't test and colleges backing away from the tests, right? The College Board, while the future of testing was still very much in doubt about 3 years ago, decided this is our chance, not that much to lose. We're going to go all in on big changes to our exam. And for the first time ever, we're going to do changes that are purely about what we think will, in a just pretty basic way, appeal to the kids. We're not changing the test because a powerful college system like the UCs, ironically, is making us, or because there's this huge public money, you know, bag of money to chase Common Core, you know, retrofitting the test for that. This was about let's get the kids back. Let's give them a much shorter test, and let's get rid of things we don't like long reading passages. And the College Board, I have to hand it to them. They did this in a smart way, in that they did everything right. They announced it far in advance. They got a good half dozen solid practice tests available well in advance. And here's the big thing. They committed to going 180 degrees to a fully digital test. Uh-huh. In so doing, they could modernize it and make it adaptive in its structure. They also changed the scoring a bit. And that's how they made the test about an hour shorter for students, but still basically just as robust in terms of what colleges require of them. So ACT already getting their clock cleaned by the College Board, by the SAT. Over the past year or so, it's been brutal for the ACT, because in my practice, we try to get kids to take diagnostic tests and act in their best interest. And that has been a real challenge, because we've got legions of kids who are looking at their options and saying, okay, yeah, you're telling me my ceiling on the ACT appears higher. It's the better fit for me for all these specific reasons. But that test is an hour longer, has more than twice as many questions, mm-hmm. is full of long reading passages, has this science section that's weird. Why on earth would I do that? So to give you a number, it was like 5-1 SAT over ACT, when, as you know, at your schools, historically, it should, if everybody's calm and just acts out of their own best interest, it should be 50-50. That has not happened. So I wanted to just give you that background before then go into, so then the question is, how is ACT responding? And that's where it gets weird.
Ooh, we love weird. So
and didn't I don't do know a lot of the things that you said ramping in that the College Board did. So shorter timeline. So bring us through this, and maybe with the lens of we have our class of 26 juniors, and mm-hmm. when we had a webinar with some Philly area families with Maddie Steiner, they did a great job presenting this information. So our juniors who are really in it, and then maybe some right. of the changes that you see a little bit longer term.
And Adam, yeah, I mean, you spoke at Dwight. When was that? I want to say it was October or November this past mm-hmm. fall. So much has transpired since then.
A lot has changed, yeah. So more is coming to focus.
Yeah, so, well, we're just going to have you back. But I think it's, what Eric is saying, I think, is definitely, I have questions, but I think I'd rather just hear you tell sure. us your insights, because I have a feeling they're going to answer your insights are going to answer a lot of our questions.
Absolutely. So I did the math. I've been on one out of 23 of your shows. And if that trend continues, it means something with testing continues to be horribly awry. Eric, I'm glad you pointed out the classier distinction, because the timeline on which ACT is doing these things means that the advice really is different for different class years. And even different types of students within a class year, the advice needs to vary. So I'll explain. So basically, ACT has a problem, right? And it is a marketplace problem. Students are voting with their feet for the alternative. It is not irrelevant to me that in the background here, last year, ACT, as part of surviving, has been acquired by private equity. So no shade, and I'm sure significant portions of your audience in Northern New Jersey and on the main line and in Manhattan that work in finance, that's, you know, but you can see the effects of the urgency and impatience and so on in how ACT is responding here. So they needed to clearly shorten the test to make it more competitive with students. Well, the best way to do that is what College Board did. Commit to going entirely digital, and then you can make it adaptive in structure. So it's kind of customized on the fly as it sees how students are doing. This is the modern way to do assessment. ACT decided not to do those things. I think they felt that it was a good differentiator to keep a paper option available to students. And I appreciate that. A lot of students, and certainly I bet the three of us, would prefer a paper test where we can mark up a reading passage and write on the math figures and so on. I get it. But that tied their hands, because you can't have a paper test that's also adaptive. So what were they to do? Well, keep in mind also that they are in a huge hurry, and they just don't have the resources that College Board does. They're just not as diversified or as big. So the decision that they announced last fall was to make the science portion of the ACT optional. ACT is about a 3-hour test, and science is the last 40 minutes. So making science optional and giving two of the other sections a modest haircut gets the ACT down to a total length, theoretically, of just over 2 hours, and just a wee bit shorter than the College Board's SAT. Mission accomplished. Nothing to see here. What's the problem? Many problems. Number one, Eric, when you were involved in determining policy at the University of Pennsylvania, right? Were you just led by the nose by the College Board and by the ACT? Did they govern how your testing policies and practices?
No, not at all. And we'd be sitting here saying we need to see more data, so take that science test.
Yeah, well, so ACT making science optional does not at all mean that it is now irrelevant for colleges. And if you think about what's going on here, in your practices, the last 5 years, how much of a drag has it been to just constantly be trying to explain the nuance around test optional? Should you really push hard for the scores anyway? Can you really let them go? That conversation is a pain in the neck, case by case, and every single school, the tenor of how you might talk about their position on testing is a little bit different, right?
Right, right. It depends. Now
it depends. Now, inside of that, ACT is foisting upon colleges the necessity for colleges to think through, okay, what's going to be our new position on science? Are we going to require it? Right. Are we going to decide to ignore it altogether no matter what? Or are we going to make it optional? And then therefore that question now applies to science. Is it like preferred? Is it really now less important, but you'll still see it. Confusing matters further. ACT unilaterally decided to drop science from the composite score.
That's the one that gets me so confused. That's the one, right? Sorry.
Eileen, they tried to read your mind and they decided that it actually would be less confusing if they had a consistent definition of a composite. So here's what I'm saying. Your students who take the new ACT, and it debuts broadly, becomes the only option as of September. At that point, even if they took the science and did really, really well, it's not presented as part of the composite. The composite is now going to be the average of only the English, math, and reading. This policy decision that ACT made has consequences. We modeled this for tens of thousands of our own students, and we found that if you take science out of their composite, most of them, their composite changes. And there's winners or losers. It goes up or down. So people in your shoes are going to have situations like there's a student for whom Vanderbilt was their top choice. And let's say Vandy is you know, representing that 33 is the number on the ACT. You know, that's the number at which you're okay, you'd submit it. And a student thought they had a 33, but finds out that the way Vanderbilt's going to treat a composite, it's actually more effectively just a 32 or even a 31 in a weird scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. That's lots of fun, right? So yeah, every college ideally needs to articulate ASAP how they feel about science with some specificity and nuance, and how they're going to treat the composite. And there's this 1 year transition question of, for your students who take the, let's call it the old ACT this spring, the new ACT in the fall, have lopsided scores. Will colleges mix and match across versions of the test? We call that super scoring. Super scoring with one super is when you're mixing and matching across the same version on different tests.
This
test
is super duper.
Super duper scoring.
And it's also all confusing and opaque. That's the problem.
Yeah,
for
and like, how confident are you two as seasoned pros that colleges are going to make this a priority, are going to think it through carefully, articulate it in a clear way, and get that out there, you know, yesterday?
That's right.
It is not happening.
It's not happening. And here's the thing. They're just coming off, as you said, 5 years of potentially being in a test optional scenario. And so they might be evaluating data based on a student's success at their institution and compare those who did submit testing with those who applied test optional. But they need the time to run those numbers and to actually make those comparisons.
Get a faculty committee together to convene. Yeah. You know?
Exactly.
And there's this fraught political climate hanging over their heads. It's really a bummer to me, even though I understand it, that over the last 5 years, colleges in general have become less transparent and more awkward and confusing in how they talk about their testing posture, not less. There are exceptions, but we have not really gotten the clarity. Common sense has kind of prevailed that in this environment, with some colleges, not that many, but some going back to requiring the tests, but all kids now able to take the test again, it's kind of logical that testing is optimal.
Mm-hmm.
When it's optional, think of it as this optimal. But it shouldn't be left to as much speculation as it so often seems to be.
And so here I am, I'm a junior class of 2026, you know, we're running through, you know, the month of March, and there's a couple paper tests available for ACT, a couple more administrations. There's some online, which isn't adaptive, as you said. So there's the ACT, but let's say that, you know, I tested with Compass in 10th grade, as we do in our school. And, you know, you're in that zone saying ACT for this current junior in high school. You know, they're making their plans. They maybe have already taken a test or registered for one, certainly.
Yeah.
Which one should they take if they are leaning ACT, or what are their options?
That is the question. First, I want to say, as much as I'm being critical about what ACT is doing, and there's some real kind of awkward transition issues here, I still, if I'm a student, or this is not just, you know, academic for me, I have 11th grade twins and a 10th grader. So what are they going to do? Well, they're going to go through the process of practice testing. And if ACT is the stronger test for them. Uh-huh. That's the one that they should pursue.
Right.
They should cope with the issues, and it's the upside is greater than the downside. However, you know, I don't know if you're a baseball fan, Eric, or just football, but in baseball, a tie goes to who? A tie goes to the runner. So in testing in 26 for the class of 26, if it's really just a tie, you probably would opt for the SAT because there's no confusion about which sections you should take. You're not going to accidentally leave something off. There's no uncertainty about how colleges are going to treat your scores. There is an enormous solid bank of practice tests available. Every tutor worth their salts knows how to handle the test. No downsides. The only downside is it's not the best fit for a lot of students. The ACT in its current form, it's called the old test. So here we have to get into timeline. Bear with me. Mm-hmm. Here's where radio, you wish you had some visuals. Okay. the new ACT, ACT is offered 7 national test dates a year. The new ACT debuts in digital form only in April and then June and July. Those are its first 3 available dates. ACT is admitting that is a quote unquote soft launch period. If you work in tech and you hear soft launch, you think, what? Let me let this beta version settle before I do
before
something
I go
high
full
stakes
on,
here.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't install like a beta update to Zoom 5 minutes before your huge presentation, you don't do that. So the new version on these initial 3 test dates is really not ready for prime time. And every test prep company and tutor I know is advising students against it. There is also a real dearth of legitimate, helpful practice tests for it.
Right. Because what are they going to do? Let me ask you, though, does the content change in any of the other sections other than, as you very eloquently mentioned, a haircut? Are they shifting the content?
This is a really important question. And here I have finally a little bit of good news.
Yeah.
The content is changing only very modestly and not in any way that is likely to favor a particular student or not. So here's why that's good news. Let's say you as a junior, you're an ACT kid. You're going with the test that's best for you. In the early going here, April, June, July test dates, you should stick with the current version, which will guarantee you take science. And you should take it on paper because paper is going to be more widely available and more stable. So that's juniors. If you're ACT kid, the current version paper through July. After that, if you're not yet done, and many, many students aren't, you need to take it again fall senior year. As of September, it's only the new version that's available. But to Eileen's important point, minimal content changes. So the transition to the new version basically just gets a bit easier on you because it gets a bit shorter. One final point, though, if you're continuing to take the ACT juniors in fall of senior year coming up, you probably want to stick with the paper version. Again, it's more stable. And you almost certainly will want to keep taking the science, even though you don't have to.
Right.
Because you almost certainly will have some colleges that end up wanting to use it. And for many students, ACT science, while they don't like it at first, ACT just kind of gave into that. If you educate kids, give them practice tests, a lot of them realize, wow, the science is very coachable. Like I can improve a lot, and it's an opportunity rather than a drag. So that's the timeline and playbook for juniors. Stick with the old as long as you can and always include science. Transition to September if you have to, and stick with science and stick with paper is the key.
So
that's going to get replayed on the SXM app a lot. Katie, we're going to want the data on that. People are like, I just heard this in the car. We got this guy, Adam Ingersoll, on SiriusXM Business Radio, The Process. And what
I mean, you
so
can
what
make
am
it really
supposed
simple.
To do?
Just say, if you're a junior, you're taking the ACT in calendar year 2025, just always make sure you're signing up for the paper version.
Right.
Because the new version isn't offered on paper on the first 3 dates anyway. So you couldn't mess up and take the ill-advised version. It's actually your 10th graders for whom this gets a bit stickier.
So
do we
I
know
have a
enough
question
yet on that.
Yeah.
I mean, as you're saying, the college policies.
Has any college come out and said, we are totally fine without the science section?
Not exactly. That's okay. You asked kind of that question in a really precise way, and that's important, right? Because you didn't just say have colleges said it's optional. You're looking for colleges to give some certainty that they really don't care about it. Mm-hmm. And no, I have not seen a college that where tests matter in the first place that has said that has put it that way. So far, Harvard, Stanford, Brown, now Georgia Tech as well as of today. Are amongst the notables that have said, well, it's going to be optional. Okay, like that's what we expected, you know, but say more. Yeah. You used it for generations, like literally for the last 75 years, you used it. Now you, do you still care about it? Is it preferred? Is it optimal? Or is it truly, as Eileen put it, you don't care? So because it, you don't know, every junior right now is still taking the science, even though they technically don't have to. Because if you're a junior right now, your college list is not final, right? At least it shouldn't
Correct.
Be. So how do you know you're not going to have a college pop onto your radar in the fall that where science would have helped you or is even actually required?
Adam, with what you just said about Harvard, Stanford, Brown, Georgia Tech said that science could be optional, making certain assumptions, but does it surprise you that a Georgia Tech said that, or with what you know about the test, whether it was valuable to them at all or not? Like, was that a surprise to you? Or
yeah, really? Georgia Tech is an interesting case in that, you know, so many of their most competitive programs are STEM programs where you might think superficially ACT science that would be relevant. I think in Georgia, the leaders of the universities are really trying to have testing policy that is as inclusive as possible.
There you go.
So we're still allowed to say that. That I think is winning the day. But if I'm cynical, Eric, as you well know, you know, when you're at a very high profile place, you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. In that,
right.
If you let something be optional, but you don't use language like Eileen was seeking that really diminishes its importance, you're still going to get that from the majority of your applicant pool. Okay. So it's, you get to have the halo of more flexible, inclusive policy, but still get the scores that are helpful to you from the vast majority of your pool. Yep. So win-win for colleges, I suppose.
Yeah. I have a few questions, and one of them goes back to something that you said about when they register, it's going to be easier for students to take the paper version, right? There are more places offering it. And this brings up concerns for us because, you know, a good portion of our students are from Manhattan.
Yes.
ACT does not offer the test in July in New York State, but you know, they can come across the river and come to Jersey as they do for school every day. As they do, but go West, young man, go West. But here's the deal. Finding an open or available test site is becoming so much more challenging. And I'm wondering if this is going to even ratchet it up further because of the digital aspect and the equipment that is necessary for that. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, at the top, when I said parents in my audiences are just like shaking their heads, this is one of those moments because ACT already in many, many parts of the country has this capacity problem. ACT's digital misadventures here are comical. So again, I have to use contrast. College Board has this very mature, stable platform called Blue Book. All AP exams are taken through it, SAT and so on. It works. And the schools that have been hosting the digital SAT, even ones that really don't like the College Board, most grudgingly admit, this is easy. This is really an improvement. College Board's Blue Book platform allows students to bring their own device. ACT, when they announced they're going to a digital test, they said with a straight face that the schools hosting the digital test would have to provide a device for every student. Eric, imagine going to your head of school and your head of tech, technology, IT, and saying, all right, we're going to be an open test site. And on the weekend with just a minimal staff here, we're going to let kids come on campus and be on our network, on our devices. And hey, that'd be great, wouldn't it? That's just a joke, you know? So the digital version for these early test dates is incredibly hard to find in the first place. Now, ACT realizes that that is a major Achilles heel. So they are feverishly working on their own platform, and they're going to call it Gateway. We've seen it. It's a work in progress, to put it mildly. This is one of the known unknowns that over the course of the year, you know, we'll be sharing information about. But they are working on a platform that would let kids bring their own device. As of now, it's not clear when that will happen and whether it will be all devices or only Chromebooks or, you know, no Macs, et cetera. So it's just more kind of Mickey Mouse stuff. And it's embarrassing for those of us. Those of us who have always kind of rooted for the ACT as the underdog. Tough case right now. Yeah.
So has there been any conversation that you are aware of for ACT to actually manage their own test sites?
Yeah, that was kind of a follow-up question. Where do you see the future, Adam, with all of this? And just really thinking about, what does the future look like?
Eric, this is easier for me to answer now that you're on this on the high school side of the desk.
Yeah.
The side of the light.
Have the colleges open up and have them as the sites.
I mean, right. I can criticize ACT here, but ultimately, ACT and College Board are businesses. The colleges are their clients, and the students are the product. So the colleges, really, because they hold so much power, have basically been complicit in having the high schools provide this labor and manage the hassle of hosting the tests. To answer your direct question, ACT and College Board taking it upon themselves to, on a widespread basis, host the tests at like hotels and so on, they don't want to do that because they don't want to remove the motivation for schools to host. They don't want to do it entirely, but they are doing it in the parts of the country, particularly the West Coast, where tests or seats are in the most scarce supply. What they do is they add late in the process. They will add a pop-up site, a hotel, a convention center, but they try to not do that until they first put as much pressure as they can on schools that might be willing to host it. I've talked to my friends at USC admissions, and I'm like, hey, why don't you guys have these weekends where you work with the public schools to provide transportation kits from all over the city? You host a massive test site. You could even have a third party come in and do the proctoring. I've talked to ACT about that. They're not necessarily opposed. And you could then keep those kids and serve them a lunch and do programming, admissions, outreach stuff. That would be amazing. It would have direct benefit to you in enrollment, and you would get just incredible just gratitude from the entire secondary school landscape. And they, admissions folks there, they like the idea, but they say that's not really what we do. Like, it'd have to be facilities and legal and so on that would, you know, it's just not easy to put that together the way you might think. And I understand that. But boy, it seems like the way things should be. And it feels like an opportunity for a college at some point to step up and lead the way here.
Absolutely.
And just think of all of you listening on SiriusXM Business Radio right now with Adam Ingersoll from Compass Education Group. I mean, we are talking about seismic shifts in so many, the testing industry. We just have a couple more minutes, Adam, and maybe just a couple of other questions. I won't go to the AI question, but you could certainly go into that. You know, given that you are a graduate of USC, and I know you stay on top of things, and so maybe you've seen recently that the business school is actually going to have an early decision program. We're always regular decision, and then EA over the last, I forget, I think last couple of years.
2 years.
But now a school within the university having early decision. Their dean was the former dean at Wharton, and from a competitive standpoint, completely get it. And not even ask you whether you think it's good or bad, but you can say that it's just interesting that there's some adaptability there. And so I'm just kind of putting it out there if, as an alum, you have a feeling about it.
I actually applaud USC for holding out as long as they did on, you know, succumbing to the, you know, the
ED.
I will say it. the like somewhat selfish upsides for a college of ED programs. USC held out as long as I think they realistically could. I think, Eric, what I've seen in the past 5-10 years is it used to be a long time ago. This is going to sound, you know, make me sound old, but it used to be, if I really felt like colleges felt obligated to set their testing policies with a lot of consideration for the downstream effects, how it was going to affect students and counselors. And of late, I see it feels like colleges are simply doing what is in kind of a mercenary way, what is in their best interest, serves their needs. And this is not to pick on one school, but you take all of the just the confusion around testing policies. There's no easy buckets. Carnegie Mellon, if I'm not mistaken, is a school where the tests are required for computer science, optional for theater, which is portfolio, and then test flexible for every other program at the university, where flexible means we require something, but it doesn't have to be the SAT or ACT. Right. It's like Yale. It could be AP or IB.
And NYU has that policy too, yeah.
Every school, there's just, you know, sort of snowflake policies going on. And it's you know, it's like Common App. On the one hand, that was supposed to streamline and make things easier, and you know what's happened. Every college wants the benefit of more apps through Common App, but also tries to stuff in their own, you know, extra essays and everything that just makes your life more difficult.
Well,
so I think we're only going to see more of that.
And I really, you know, I'm always thinking about the student and how equitable is this? Not to mention the you know, the mental well-being and anxiety. And we know that this is a huge, testing is a huge anxiety generator among students, not to mention the entire college process. But it's the lack of clarity and consistency, I think, that really drives kids to distraction and their parents as well. So it's a
complexity
good point.
Complexity and nuance does not serve the underserved.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, for the fourth time, we've had Adam Ingersoll on our show from Compass Education Group. There's so much to learn from with what you've had to say, Adam. We really appreciate your time and support and energy around these topics. So thank you.
Thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Adam. And I guess as if the trend continues, I'll see you again soon.
Exactly.
In about 23 shows.
and we hope that you're going to see us again soon. That's the process. New episodes are available on the last weekend of every month. And you can listen to the show on anytime on the SXM app. Download it. If you have a question about anything we discussed today or a topic, a school maybe, for we haven't had College Spotlight this week. So if you want to add a College Spotlight, let us know where you went. Give us a call at 866-993-8267 or send us an email.
Absolutely. Shoot us an email at theprocess@SiriusXM.com. And I think that's a wrap. So
that's a wrap. Show 92 again. Adam and yourself, thank you.
Thanks
Eileen,
so much.
See you next time.
I'll see you next time.
Give it time. Go ahead and give it hell. Give it all you've got. Or give it up for something else. It's a revelation. It's a hallelujah.